Well, good morning, everyone.
Okay, well, so this is Commissioner Barbara Baker convening the Big Tent Committee meeting for this morning. We are running a little bit late, and some of the people who are on the Wildlife Committee haven't had much of a break since their meeting went long. And I didn't even get to see the video that they were showing at the end, which I would very much like to see. So I hope that that will be made available later. So without further ado, we're going to be considering three things this morning. And I'm going to take a page out of Commissioner Thorburn's playbook and rearrange those things just a bit to try to get enough attention to the big one that we need to pay attention to, as well as the items that hopefully will take a little bit less time. So we're going to start with Carrie McCausland talking about the K-12 initiative that we have been working on with respect to helping with the education systems of this the state during the pandemic and otherwise. Then we'll go to this a conversation about our mission statement, and then we'll talk about our conservation policy. Before Carrie gets started, is there anything that anybody, commissioners or staff would like to say? Okay, I don't see any hands. So Carrie, take it away. Thank you for being flexible.
Great, no problem. I just was to give you guys a little bit of history. Not everyone is familiar with the background on this topic. This was sort of a effort that started when we went into our lockdown mode and staff were at home and maybe weren't able to do the things they would normally be doing that spring this time last year. I came to the Big Tent Committee, gave you a short update about some of the stuff that we were doing in public affairs, including this, and there was a lot of interest in the commission. And one of the things that I wanted to do was come back and kind of share with you of how it's evolved over this last almost year. And for folks who haven't had a chance to take a look at the lesson plans, I'm going to pull that up and share my screen in just a moment with you. But here's a little overview of what's going on right now. We are planning or working on 33 lesson plans this year. And I'm sorry for the background chatter. Gave my 11-year-old a warning, but you know how it happens. We have 33 lesson plans that we're going to be sharing this year. Are you seeing that right now on your screens? A little nod? Yes or no? Yes. Okay. Thank you. Great. And they span these different grade levels you'll see listed right there. And the lesson plans are really designed to teach critical thinking about some of our biggest challenges. We haven't really shied away in a lot of topics, but we really want people to have this skill set to understand, help be at grade level, people sort of internalize and understand these things that we're working with. They're built for the traditional classroom setting, but they have the distant modifications in. And this was came out of that initial need where we knew that our communities were suffering and that parents were having a hard time and sometimes no education was going on at the home and they needed some resources last year. So not only can teachers put these to use, but so can homeschooling parents or caregivers of any sort. They can put this to use. And in fact, some adults seem to be enjoying them as well. One of the fun things we've been able to incorporate this year are the Wild Washington Live events. And so we have nine of them lined up. Three of them have already happened. And they're really fun. And it's a chance for students to engage with our staff around topics. And we actually do think it's students who's participating. We have really good participation levels. Now, I am going to attempt to share a different screen. This is our homepage. Page, are you seeing that? Wait. Let me hit the share button. Are you seeing that now?
Nope, we still. Yes, now we do. Yes.
Oh, okay, great. And you know, we do feature the lessons right here on the homepage, and then you can click through. That we also have a spot at the bottom where you can see it and click into all of the lesson plans that have occurred. And you can see it spans a lot of geographic diversity. We wanted to include Eastern Washington, Western Washington, and a lot of content. We do a lot of stuff here at the department, and our content opportunities are very deep. One of the really fun lesson plans that I might dive in just a little deeper, and I know you guys want to keep your time moving here, is this how to grow a fish and this information around hatchery that we did. This lessons look like, you can see that they're pretty extensive. Really helps the teacher connect with all the resources available. Many times these are resources that come from other groups partnering quite a bit. And one of the things coming up will show you that. And this, I'm just gonna show you this because it was such a fun thing that we worked on. It'll show up here in a moment, I hope. Is that linking through or do I need to share my screen to this one? Here, I'll do that.
Seeing it.
It's loaded. Okay. Carrie.
Okay, great. Thank you. So this is an interactive, I don't know if you are getting the audio, but you can click on different things and learn about that thing in the photo. And we have different settings. It's just super fun and super interactive. And this is something that the teachers can provide to students for them to explore on their own and then come back into the classroom setting and have more discussion about it. Okay. So I invite you to take some time and poke around a little bit. It's a lot of fun. I'm going to close that out. And I see we have a hand up. Should we take that now while I pull up our PowerPoint again? Or
sure. I'm sorry. I don't see the hand. So who's ever got a question, feel free to ask it.
Maybe I imagine the hand. Okay, we'll move on. Really a big effort around this is engaging our partners. We didn't want to create these in a vacuum ourselves. So I've listed just some of the partners that we've been working on so far this year with these lesson plans. So you can see it's a very diverse group, includes a lot of people that are new to the organization and maybe whom we don't work with regularly until this. Myself to see forward. There we go. Wanted to share some of the results so far. Really interesting. Our participation levels between Eastern and Western Washington are about what you'd expect based on population, about 30%, 70%. What we didn't expect is that we would see so many people from out of state that are interested in the lesson plans. So I don't know what that means, but that's interesting. They are some of our most positive and popular posts on Facebook. Generally, we see really high engagement levels around 22,000 levels, impressions. So these are people who aren't necessarily teachers, but who also just really enjoy the content. And then we get a lot of shares, and then that does happen within the education sort of group. And here was I shared with you guys a Facebook post, someone shared that, and it was the Port Townsend School Closure Support Group. And if you can't read it, and I know the text is small, it says, not in a classroom, you can learn in the forest with a new third to fifth grade curriculum provided free by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Check it out. The whole world is a classroom. And I couldn't have written that better myself, because I thought that was just the perfect sort of summary of what we're trying to do. I think that is the core of what I wanted to share with you guys today. If you have any questions for me, I would be happy to talk further because I love this topic.
Are there any questions for Carrie? Okay, well, Carrie, I have a comment then. Oh, wait, Fred has a question. Go ahead, Fred.
Okay, well, I just was wondering, certainly during the pandemic, I'm sure a lot of anxious parents appreciated this and support groups like the one in Port Townsend. But I was wondering, so are there plans to continue with this as hopefully we get back to normal?
I am so glad you asked that question, Fred, because I forgot to share my last slide. And that addresses that very question. Yeah, so first of all, this spring, I thought you might be curious about the lands that were coming up. And so you can see there some of the lesson plans that we have still to emerge. And then also our Wild Washington live events, our five that are still scheduled yet this year. But then next year, we're super excited about next year. We're super excited that we get to keep Leah in her position and we're going to be able to keep doing this work. We're looking at K through second grade. We want to hit those youngest school age kids next year. One of the things that we're doing this year is translating our third to fifth grade content into Spanish. And so one of the things we'll be working on this summer is to get all of those lesson plans translated into Spanish, because we hear from OSPI that that's a real curriculum need for them. And it'll be very welcome. And so we think we have an opportunity to make great inroads with that work. One of the things we're hearing from teachers, and we're doing teachers, is that the workshops to help them understand how to and build their confidence around using the lesson plans are really important. And so we're looking to hold those, hopefully in partnership with PEI, Pacific Education Institute, who has a lot of history with working with teachers in that way. And then expanded partnerships. So we see, we have so much content opportunity. It's a wealth, really. And there are a lot of people who want to partner with us, but particularly reaching out to some folks who engage with schools regularly now, like our zoos and aquariums. That's a real rich opportunity that we're excited about for next year. And then, of course, they really want to have reminders and updates. And so we're going to do some more continue our promotions, which are critical to getting people to the lesson plans. It's no good if people aren't using them, but also expanding that work. One of the fun things that we've been doing is connecting with careers opportunities and connecting with our recruitment staff. And so, for example, with our enforcement lesson plan, we were able to do a Q&A with an officer and students from across the state where they could ask, you know, about the job that they perform. And that was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Gary. I see Commissioner Smith has her hand up and Jeff Davis has his hand up. So Lorna, go ahead.
So Gary, just phenomenal work, so well done and so well needed. I think many of you know this is kind of my pet area of interest I've worked in for the last 8 years of my life, both partnering closely with Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Woodland Park Zoo and Fred. And so this is just great to see. And I just want to see it, you know, expanded and proliferated. So working with WSU Extension offices, you know, they, because people often go there to look for resources. Private schools, I'm hoping there's an organization for, you know, the homeschooling folks, you know. Let's get this out there. That kind of the sky's the limit as long as it's online. And I just, you know, kudos, well done. Whatever I as a commissioner can do to help promote this, I'm on board.
Thanks, Lorna. Jeff Davis.
Thank you. I agree. This is great work, Carrie. This is hard work too. So it's a journey as you're hearing. I just for the commission want to remind another important step in my mind is a decision package that you all supported, Evergreen Jobs, this session. Unfortunately, it didn't get picked up in the governor's budget, but there's a really critical piece inside of that Evergreen Jobs. And that's the Evergreen Schoolyards piece. And I'm hoping that we can continue to work with the governor's office and the legislature to get that in there so that this curriculum that Carrie and others are working on can be translated into outdoor classrooms on school grounds around natural resources, natural resource industries, and really take it much further and really vastly improve us growing and influencing the future, you know, hunters, anglers, and outdoor recreationists for the people that come behind us.
Thank you, Jeff. Commissioner McIsaac.
There we go. How about that? Thank you, Madam Chair of the committee. My kudos as well. I just did not see this presentation posted on the Big Tent Committee materials and just wondered if that could be so for this date so we could come back and take another look at it and have it as a resource when we talk to other people about it.
Think you can make that happen, Carrie?
Yes, and my apologies, Commissioner. We will make that happen.
Thanks. It looks like Lorna has another question or comment.
I just wanted to ask Jeff if he could give us the information on that piece of the legislative package, if there's a hope that that might still be alive. I'd like to know about that. Can we talk or email or something, Jeff, about that?
Yeah, that sounds good. The budgets are about to roll out, so I don't know how viable it is for this session, but I just don't want to lose it. It is something that we could come back on next session or the following big session before the administration, who I think is interested in this, is no longer.
Okay.
Thanks to, Commissioner Kuntz, is your hand up again or did you forget to take it down?
No, it's up again. I just wanted to share another experience I've had. This is great. But there are other environmental education organizations in the state that, you know, provide some of the same kind of stuff and information. And when I was in another life, a curator, much to my dismay, I discovered that people primarily really love hearing not so much from the managers or even the theory or the information. What they really appreciate was talking to the animal keepers at the zoo. And so your program that you had about the careers and the folks in the department, you know, one thing that the department has that many of the other environmental education groups don't have are the real live people out in the field doing the work. So something for you to think about, you know, in your partnerships, that's really something you could zero in on. And that would really get the kids excited because that's what they want. They want that person that's out there putting the collar on the wolf or, you know, doing the surveys out in the wetlands. And the other groups, they don't really have that as much. So just a thought that would be really kind of, you know, to zero in on something that when you partner, you bring something very valuable that's different than the other groups.
So my comment on this is to sort of agree with everybody else about a success story, but also to note that oftentimes when we deal with our thorny fish and wildlife issues, number one, we have lots of dissension and aggravation. And number two, anything that we do seems to take a long time. On this one, talk about a success story. We had a big tent committee meeting. We were all dealing with how in the heck is the state going to deal with the pandemic? And a large portion of what we were trying to figure out is, you know, the educational system. And basically what we talked about is how we can help with that. And we have the resources to help. So then we talked a little bit about money and the agency people who monitor our requests to the legislature agreed to put in a not a very large amount, but enough to get us off the ground. This is all happening within a period of weeks and months. It went into a decision package and the legislature funded it. So now we're here seeing as a big tent committee, which one of our missions is to make what we do understandable and relevant to everyone in the state. It's just hard to figure out a better platform to do that than trying to teach the young kids, you know, not only what we do, but about the natural world. So I want to appreciate every level of this. And with that in mind, I'm told that Senator Wilson is listening in. Senator, we don't normally allow public comment at our committee meetings just because we have so much to cover, but we do make exceptions for elected officials. So if you have anything that you'd like to add or suggest, please let our administrative assistant know and we'd be happy to hear from you. So with that, Commissioner McIsaac has his hand up again.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, again. Let me just say, don't forget, let's not forget to acknowledge your role in this, your leadership in this. The commission talked about this positively on several different occasions, and it was because of your leadership at the Big Tent Committee and in some other areas that really got the ball rolling. So, you know, it is a good success story. I don't know if we'll ask you to pat yourself on the back in front of the camera here, but anyway, thank you for your role in getting this thing off the launching pad.
Okay, ah shucks and all that. As we all know, this is a, you know, what we do is a team effort. And so let's just leave that there. But thank you. And thanks to everybody. And let's keep it going and make it bigger. Oh, wait, we got Nate up now.
Thanks, Commissioner Baker. Just one area I just wanted to let folks know about is we did, following your guidance, Madam Chair, we included it in the governor's request this past fall. This request ultimately did not get included in the supplemental funding in the governor's budget. And so we've scraped together some funding to keep this going. And we're also committed to keeping this going as part of our base budget. And so we made some decisions this winter to prioritize this work and keep it rolling. So we're pretty excited about the success. We want to keep funding the winning team here, and we've got an all-star that's working on this. And so pretty excited that we were able to find the funds to keep her going.
Well, I stand corrected, and thanks for that, Nate. I think that I think this is the kind of thing that the legislature will be interested in, and so and now we have something to show for. We can put our money where our mouth is. Is there anything further on our educational outreach? So, like many committees, we have these disparate issues to consider. We're going to switch gears now and go to our mission statement. The point of this is that we spent over two grueling years coming up with a strategic plan that I'm very proud of. It was a lot of work by a lot of people, and we got input from, you know, at least tens of thousands of people as we went through this process. Included in that strategic plan is a mission statement, and we all voted on it, and it's all done. What several of us have noted is that the mission statements that are in the written and sometimes spoken materials that the department uses vary slightly, occasionally, and not often, but they do vary. And so the question is, and I think Carrie you have a screen that shows some of the different mission statements, Carrie. If you can, this wouldn't be a bad time to put it up. But the question is whether we need a consistent.
I will now.
I'm sorry? The question is whether we need a consistent mission statement, how much work it would be to make sure that that happens. And if there's anybody who disagrees with the one that is included in the strategic plan. And I believe I'm looking and double checking here, but I think that that's the one that you have as recommended. So the point of this is to try to get to some consistency across the agency. And yes, that is. So that one's a little bit different.
It's slightly different at the very end.
Yeah. Okay. So having not artfully set out what we're trying to do here, I'm going to turn this over to Carrie and Nate and maybe Jeff, and then just get a couple of anybody who wants to comment let us know what we need to do to achieve the end that we're looking for. Now, we've got a question from Commissioner McIsaac and Smith. Do you want to ask those questions before the staff do a short presentation, or do you want to wait?
I think it might be good to do it at the beginning here.
Okay, go ahead, Don.
Yeah, so this is a question that I had at our last Big Tent Committee meeting when I saw the mission statement on the agenda. And I was a little surprised to see it on the agenda. I didn't know it was going to be on the agenda and wondered a little bit about how it got there. And so that's going to be my focus of some questions here before we get started, is just kind of procedurally, how did it get there? I thought it might have been an idea coming up that the committee ought to talk about whether or not we take up the mission statement as a work measure or not. We just finished a strategic plan. And anyway, I was just kind of scratching my head about it. I know there's a lot of competing topics that the Big Tent could take up. Normally, if there's a major work product, then it comes from the commission as an assignment to a committee, or it comes out of the committee of some sort of a discussion of whether or not that ought to be how we spend some time and get the full commission to weigh in on it. I can see some linkages here to strategic plan, the conservation policy, and the rest. But like I said, there's some other competing interests here, and we've talked about, I won't go into them, but anyway, there's some other ideas here. So my question is really, how did this get to be on our agenda, and what is anticipated, and what's the background of all of this? Now, if I missed a meeting or had to be distracted from a previous meeting when this was discussed, let me apologize, but I just couldn't remember this coming up at the front table or at the committee before. So if I could just maybe get keyed in on the whole picture here a little bit more, that might be useful.
Okay, so this is just to answer, the short answer to your question is I put it on the agenda. There is a couple of hands up that may elaborate on my answer a little bit. And if not, I'll elaborate on my answer later. But let's go to Commissioner Kuntz and then Nate Pamplin. I didn't see Commissioner Smith. So let's go to Kuntz first, Smith second, and then Nate. Is that okay? Okay. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that as a new commissioner, I kind of mentioned it not to change the mission statement, but what I noticed is as I started reading through the website and reading press releases and just getting caught up, Don, on all the, you know, all the background about the department, I noticed that the statement changed, just a few words here and there. But I guess it just goes back to my old management days, Don, that, you know, once you have a mission statement, it's like you got to drill it in every time you can, and you got to keep it consistent. And, you know, I thought that very much my internet's unstable, very much the strategic plan mission, I thought, captured everything. It was great. I just was concerned that it's not consistent. So that's why I mentioned it.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Smith.
So the one word missing from all of these, and I'm just going to push very hard that it get included, is science. You know, that we do all these things based on best available science, or that's the underpinning. And I just think it's really important that word be in here somewhere.
Okay, so we aren't quite to developing the mission statement yet. We were still back on trying to have a consistent one, but yeah. Your comment is completely noted. Nate, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. So just a little bit of history on this within the Big Tent Committee. A couple years ago, both the Budget and Policy Advisory Group and the Big Tent Committee spent some time talking about the department's mission statement and essentially how best to summarize the mandate under 7704012 that Carrie's got displayed on the screen. In particular, there was a lot of conversation about kind of the two components of the mission statement about conservation and then providing opportunities? And are those, does one occur first? And then once you've achieved conservation objectives, then can you provide opportunities? Or is it a dual mandate? In some of the conversations, we asked for clarification from Big Tent Committee, are kind of like, are you even interested in cracking open the mandate? And folks were quickly to say, no, we're not interested in doing that. It's more about how do you summarize the existing statute that kind of takes several paragraphs here and puts it into kind of one concise statement. And then the Big Tent Committee spent over a year or so really focusing on the strategic plan. And then this came up, and as Commissioner Kuntz noted, seeing inconsistent versions throughout the website and suggesting that we just come up with one. So that's kind of the origination of this particular project.
Thank you, Nate. I actually thought this was going to be a simple discussion. It's quickly getting embroidered. I see Commissioner McIsaac and Commissioner Smith's hands are up. Go ahead, Don.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And of course, there's blackberry vines every time you try to take a stroll anywhere, I guess. But I don't recall in the strategic plan hearing that we were going to be changing the mission statement. So we've got the RCW that's there. We've got a department mission statement that's been on the website for quite a while. Did I also miss it there that the strategic plan was altering the mission statement? Or I'm just having trouble getting started on this. And so is that what happened? I mean, did we know that was part of the thing, or is it just insignificant? The change is insignificant. I mean, the mission statements are very important. I have to agree with Fred on that they're very important. And once you've got one, that you do have to keep that in mind when you do everything. I mean, I go back and look at the RCW frequently when questions come up about should the commission be moving in that direction or not? As a matter of policy, should we do this or that, balancing things? What is the balance? What should we consider? And I hadn't even heard that we had entertained changing, which is a statutory thing, the mandate either. So it's just a matter of, you know, before something gets off the launching pad, trying to be clear, you know, what's the missile trying to do here?
All right. So the Big Tent Committee has, as Nate pointed out, discussed the mission statement in various scenarios over the years. This conversation was just to point out that while there was a mission statement adopted in the strategic plan, it's not the same mission statement that shows up in other parts of the agency. And I don't believe there was anything nefarious in that. It was just different wording in different places. And did we agree to have a consistent mission statement across the agency? And then if so, what would that be? And so we do have one that was adopted in the strategic plan. We do have others that have come up one way or the other. And I think one thing that I'm taking from this is that we all agree that we should have a consistent mission statement. At that point then becomes the question of, well, okay, who determines what that is? I thought that we lifted one actually from the agency and put it in the strategic plan. If we are talking now about going back and actually spending time revising the mission statement, then we may put this on for a longer discussion at a future Big Tent Committee and get some input from the staff as well about, you know, whether that's a commission decision or whether that's a staff decision or, you know, whether we have to go through a 2-year long process to decide what that is. But this has been a lot of discussion has gone on into this. So I'm going to quit talking. I see Commissioner Thorburn has her hand up.
Barbara, so it's sort of following up on Don. It seems a little bit like the horse is behind the cart right now. We adopted a strategic plan with a mission statement. I thought we had taken care of it. You know, the mission statements are always parts, sort of the first step of strategic plans. I think this has all the properties of a mission statement. It's concise. It says what we do, and it's compatible with the mandate. It seems like we've already taken care of this. It's a logistic issue. We need to go clean up the website and get the mission consistently used that we adopted with the strategic plan.
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. I actually kind of agree. I thought that's what we would be doing today and thought that's what we'd decide today, but maybe there are other issues that we need to discuss. We did adopt a mission statement with our strategic plan. There's no doubt about that. And there's also no doubt that that there is other language out there. So what we were talking about today originally is just whether we needed to have consistency. Now this discussion has kind of gone off in a different direction. So we'll just finish it up quickly. And if we need to talk more about the verbiage of the mission statement itself, that's a longer discussion. We'll have at another meeting. Commissioner Kuntz.
When I brought up about the consistency, I didn't ever dream that it would end up, you know, going this direction at all. Because I, again, being new, assumed that the strategic plan and the mission were passed, and I think it's just wonderful. And I just think that we ought to clean up the website. So I completely agree with Kim, and I think we ought to just move forward with that at this point.
Thanks, Fred. Commissioner Smith. Lorna, are you there?
I'm trying there. I had trouble unmuting it when I was clicking on it and it wasn't working. So what I recall is prior to 2011, the department had a mission statement. Here it is. I've got it. Essentially, you know, it said the Washington Department's Fish and Wildlife serves Washington citizens by protecting, restoring, and enhancing fish and wildlife and their habitats while providing sustainable and wildlife-related recreation and commercial opportunities. And then under that were a number of goals, and that's where science was mentioned. So there was a goal number 5, promote development and responsible use of sound objective science to inform decision making. So, you know, I'm not sure why we changed away from what was out there in 2011, but in my view, you know, we lost that piece. And, you know, if we do decide to revisit the mission, I'd like to go back to where it was, and at least to bring forward as part of the conversation that mission and goals from 2011.
Okay, thank you, Lorna. I think I've heard from, what the next step is here is to be able to synopsize this for the full commission tomorrow. And I'd like to ask if there's anybody who disagrees with the proposition that the mission statement should be consistent across the agency, and that for now, the mission statement, at least the commission's recommended mission statement, would be the one that was adopted in the strategic plan. I see Commissioner McIsaac's hand is up.
There we go. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I think that's a pretty reasonable thing, but just so I'm squared up on it, when we adopted this strategic plan with a somewhat different mission statement, what is the change from what it was prior to that?
I'm not sure. Maybe Nate can answer that question. The reason that I can't answer that question is because we have had several on the books for as long as I've been on the commission, which is exactly the same amount of time as you've been on the commission, Don.
Right. So that's why I don't remember some of those old historic conversations about that. I do think consistency is important, but maybe it's a question for Jeff in terms of, he said a few words have changed, and I just don't recall that being a highlight. Maybe it was because when we were told that it was not that significant, but you know, I just wonder, well, what are the differences between that and what used to be on the wall when we walked into the NRB or wherever that was?
Can I take a shot at that?
I'd love to hear what you have to say, Jeff.
Yeah. The difference is we had a mission statement that's on a, was on a plaque in the director's conference room, and it was not a mission statement. and when I say that, it's a whole plaque of bulleted, like, use science, do this, do that, do this, or we do this. And a mission statement, as you all know better than most, is really a clear and concise statement that tells what you do and why it's important. And I would argue that the mission statement identified in the strategic plan is just a clear and concise statement of what our mandate is. So I don't see a lot of difference. You could probably get into debating the word sustainable versus shall conserve, does not impair the resources, but the intention really is to have a clear and concise mission statement so that when people pick it up, they have a sense for what you do, including internally, that it helps remind us of how collectively we're operating on behalf of Washington residents.
But in terms of how it changed from prior, are you saying there was substantial changes or there was almost no changes, or what was the mission statement before we revised it?
I'm going to argue we didn't really have a mission statement before. It was a plaque of multiple areas for us to focus on, which I would argue are captured in the strategic plan itself, right? Like, we're going to be efficient and effective operationally. That's in the plan. Amy's all over it. So I can dig up that plaque and ship that around so that you can see it. I think the most important thing is our mission statement should be tied and visibly tied to our mandate, which is what I think we did in the strategic plan.
So, Commissioner Thorburn.
Yeah, there were a lot of statements that sort of used the language of the mandate in various places on the website and that sort of thing. And I think this just kind of cleaned it up. You know, it was more than the plaque. You could read things in other documents that the department produced that used the language. So, you know, I think we did a good job, or the staff did a really good job of doing what you're supposed to do with a mission. I said that before. I also want to reassure Lorna that science is goal number 3 in our strategic plan. So that has not been lost. And we've already had some presentations in our previous big tent meeting about the activities that are already taking place, the actions that are already taking place under that goal. So Lorna, it is not lost. It's still a big part of the strategic plan.
Thanks, Kim.
Carrie.
I just wanted to let Commissioner McIsaac know, even though Fred found 3 instances of different missions, when I looked for the strategic plan, I found many more. So I don't know if I could identify what the mission statement was. I kind of wasn't in my somewhat cursory research to do that. I think that we've had a variety of different versions over a period of time that and flowed, and together the version for the strategic plan, it was sort of taking what we thought was maybe the best of those and putting it into one little short statement. So I would have a hard time knowing which one to use from our past to show the difference.
Okay, well, thank you. I know they're very hard to do when you think through them. They're not easy to come up with, so.
So I'd like to... I'd like to draw this discussion to a close. We will all be on the call tomorrow or on the video tomorrow and can put in our pieces. But I think the point is that we would like to see a consistent mission statement across the board. And Carrie, I don't know how much work that will be, but perhaps you could report back to us next time. But just that it just makes sense to not have many, many varieties of the same thing. And so let's move on. And if we need to talk about the mission statement itself at a further Big Tent Committee, we're fine with that. But there is the third item on our agenda may or may not take a lot of discussion. And that is whether we need to develop a commission conservation policy. And if so, how do we begin to do that and what should be in it? And I'd like to just a little bit of a preamble to that discussion. This committee is a fairly difficult committee to be on because we aren't presented with specific problems that we can react to with the input of many very knowledgeable people and interest groups in this committee. We're sort of the think tank, the way that I look at it. We look at developing overarching policies that address each of the areas of the agency that guide what we hope to see in the future as we manage natural resources. And as part of that, you know, we hope to reassure the people of the state that we are thinking ahead and that we do all, I believe, have as a goal to have biodiversity and wildlife and all of the things that we enjoy today available for our great grandkids. So it's kind of the kind of thing that I think about when I think about this committee, and that's why the strategic plan took so long. And we made some missteps as we went through the strategic plan that in retrospect we can learn from, and that's making sure that we hear as much as we can, and we do outreach to everyone currently in the state, regardless of rural, urban, what side of the mountains, all of that. We need to listen to everyone and also look at science. And also, from my perspective, we need to look at what other states and what other groups are doing in this regard. So the strategic plan was sort of a set of goals. And I look at the conservation policy is sort of a roadmap of how we get there. It's how we achieve those goals. So I tried to look around at a couple of other states and at other agencies to see how they're doing this. And it is absolutely all over the board. So part of this, I've asked staff to put together a little bit of a program for us. But like Missouri, they have the luxury of having a dedicated tax. So they've got money. But their commission is a four-member commission that's called the Conservation Commission. That's what they're called. And they don't really spend as much time, at least as far as I can tell, developing policies and spending 3 days on, you know, all of the hard questions that we answer. They actually act more as judges. They ratify or verify or approve department policies based on their conservation objectives. California has a big old long conservation policy, but it's broken down into many segments, you know, fish and it has vessels and offshore. And so it's a little bit different. So I guess what I'm saying about this is that trying to come up with a conservation policy is going to be difficult. It's cutting edge. I think it's very important. And it gets to all the questions like Lorna was bringing up about what do we do with science and how does it fit with our strategic plan? And what about landscape conservation versus single species management? And what about money? So I think this is an important discussion to have. I'd like to have Jeff and Nate show us whatever they've got to show us. And then I'd like to begin the conversation. And this is with full awareness that all we're doing today is beginning this conversation, but we've got a bunch of really smart people on this committee and on our commission. And so I think this is the time, given the just enormous, oh, one other thing, AFWA. We have one person on this committee, which is Commissioner Thorburn, who's very, very, she participates in both WAFWA and AFWA. This, if you look at the AFWA website, almost all of the recent scientific journals that are scientific papers that are being published have something to do with conservation, are ringing alarm bells about the future, and are making some suggestions about what we can and should do. What I'm looking at is trying to figure out a way to really how to harness that and how to make it a set of points rather than just a general general good idea. So that's a start. I don't see any hands up. If anybody wants to comment initially, that's fine. And if not, we will go on. And I see Commissioner Thorburn's hand is up.
Thanks. So I put my hand up and then back down because you said Jeff and Nate were going to talk. But I'll go ahead and get started. We have, and it was provided for us, the department's policy, conservation policy, which I think is a really good one. What surprised me in looking at both the conservation principles and the policy was the word biodiversity does not appear in either the principles or the policy. And for me, that is the ultimate goal of a conservation policy. It would be for my conservation policy. I mean, we're talking about the sixth great extinction. We're losing biodiversity globally. And as the administrators of the public trust, it seems to me that's our ultimate goal, that we need to do everything from a conservation standpoint to preserve biodiversity. So a little bit of my thinking on this, we as a commission so often look at wildlife issues species by species, and there's a lot of reason that we do that. For example, when we're looking at species status, listing, we're required to do that statutorily, both the federal ESA and our state statutes and regulations, which mirror the ESA to a degree, talk about species. And so we're sort of pulled into this by statutory requirements. We're not going to, however, we've seen, and the ESA, of course, is a fabulous one of the most important conservation laws that we have. It has not proven itself that in terms of preserving biodiversity. There are kind of a couple of steps when a species is listed, you do mitigation and try to stop the decline, and then you try to develop a plan to recover it. The ESA has been pretty successful in stopping the decline. Extinctions have been prevented. The recovery is often a whole lot harder, unless it's solely a mitigation need. For example, DDT with peregrine falcons and bald eagles, that was really what was causing the decline. When we started getting DDT out of the environment, we've seen marvelous recovery. But they're generalist species, and that's all they really needed. But for things like salmon and sage grouse, they need habitats. And those recovery plans, and add in climate change now with new threats to their habitats, are much, much more difficult. And so for me, if we look at a conservation plan or policy for the commission, I would like it to guide us and guide future policy to look at conservation more from a landscape lens and to really focus on ecosystems and landscapes in a conservation policy, because that's the only way that we're going to be able to preserve biodiversity from my standpoint. Good examples, we have suites of species that we've been looking at with our PSRs and status reports that are in highly threatened ecosystems in our state, the coastal prairies and the shrub steppe. And if we just kind of add that to our conservation approach, I think we'll be much more effective in accomplishing conservation. It requires, I think, if we develop this as a commission policy and start looking at all of our processes, land acquisition, we were talking about in an earlier committee, for example, are we getting corridors? Those kinds of questions as we do all of our processes. And then the other part that would go into such a conservation policy is the importance of partnerships, because it's not something that we do ourselves, and it's not even really the priority work of the department. We'll have to really understand and strengthen partnerships with a conservation policy that thinks in this way. I'm done.
Well, I hope you're not done, because you are beginning the conversation that we need to have. So thank you so much for that. Commissioner Smith has her hand up.
I just want to point out, I want to hear what staff has to say, but a lot of what Kim was just talking about, the department actually has done that. And, in 2005, a report was published, Washington's Comprehensive Wildlife Conservation Strategy, that outlines the ecoregions, exactly the approach that Kim's been talking about. And I'm wondering what happened to that. As I read through that, that is exactly where we need to be going. Maybe there's some updating that needs to happen to that strategy, but it was well prepared. There were partners involved. So I'm wondering where that stands today.
Commissioner Kuntz.
Yeah, I want to get to the staff, so I'll be brief because we have lots of things to discuss. But I just wanted to say before we get going much further that I think having this possibility in the Big Tent Committee makes perfect sense. I think one of the greatest challenges that we have moving forward, and I think everybody agrees, is getting more supporters and collaborators and participants in the department. And I think that outside of the department, there's still this old paradigm and of what the department is, and it's still fish and game to many people. So, whether we have a consistent mission statement and a new strategic plan, I think having a policy from the commission on, on exactly what is conservation to us and, how do we see the future, it would help to create a bigger tent of supporters, because they would start to see, that we're not our parents' fish and wildlife. We're not even our present fish and wildlife. We're building the fish and wildlife department of the future. So I think the big tent is the perfect committee to explore this idea. And I'm going to hear from the staff.
Thank you. Jeff and or Nate, I know what's on the website. What do you exactly have for us today?
Nate, we didn't get a chance to talk before this. We did send the documents. Madam Vice Chair, to Nikki, I'm not sure if you want to pull those up or if you really are just looking for Nate and Jeff's perspective on how we're thinking about conservation policy in light of, you know, the agency's mandate and mission.
Okay, so let me just sort of repeat one thing I said earlier. These conversations are hard to get off the ground. Usually once you get them off the ground and you have a plan for how you're going to get somewhere, they get easier. But so when Jeff and Nate and I were talking about how to start this, we at least agreed on two things. One is that we needed a definition of conservation, or we need an agreed definition of conservation. We use it, the strategic plans replete with that word. We use it all the time when we're talking, probably too much. And so that was one thing that I thought, well, yeah, that's something we need to work on. And the other one is something that the Big Tent Committee has dealt with in the past, which is the principles under which we operate. As we all know, there was, and I think that's another one of the slides that's available to us. There's the North America model, which is the oldest set of principles that fish and wildlife agencies work with. Then there was a new set called the Principles of Wildlife Management that came out that shifted the focus a bit. And I think at one of the older Big Tent Committee meetings that we had, we decided that there's nothing that confines us as a state to going with one or the other, and that perhaps we should set out our own principles drawing from both. So that was the two sets of concrete things that people who were trying to grapple with such a big question that would sort of set the stage for answering the question. As always with these kind of questions, we also have process, sort of like, how are we going to do this? And it's pretty obvious listening to this discussion, and we're at our embryonic stages of a conservation policy, that we need to have more discussion about that before we, you know, go very far outside of anywhere, because right now we don't know how we're going to proceed. So with that, Nate, do you have anything to add to the conversation?
Madam Chair, I feel like we're maybe caught a little bit flat-footed in that we thought this was really going to be for the Big Tent discussion. So the materials that we had talked about providing for you was kind of the comparison of, as you noted, the North American model of wildlife conservation, some recent discussions that the commission has been briefed on a couple years ago about a wildlife governance and kind of taking the North American model and moving it into the 21st century, noting aspects about biodiversity and landscape approaches, et cetera. We have the department's conservation policy, which does include a definition of conservation. It also includes a lot of the elements that I heard Commissioner Thorburn indicate in terms of, we can't do this alone. We do need to pursue partnerships, that it is a focus on ecosystems, and that the way we do conservation is essentially place-based. And so there's a big chunk of that policy talking about the importance of establishing cross-program interdisciplinary teams at what we organize ourselves around districts and around regions, and then at headquarters. And how do we have that horizontal and vertical engagement of staff to help solve today's conservation challenges. So I guess I would encourage folks to really look at the conservation policy, those conservation principles that are in it and that approach, and see if that's something that either the commission wants to endorse, or is it something that you would want to refine and even take at you know, take it from a 30,000 foot level to the 50,000 foot level as part of a commission policy. So we're kind of here to support you in the conversation that you all would like to have.
So are any other hands up? Okay, I see Commissioner Thorburn and then Amy.
Yeah, just very quickly. I agree with Nate. I really feel that the conservation policy reflects how I think about conservation. So, you know, whether we want to take it to another level just to show how the commission provides guidance and thinking to it, you know, I don't know, or just endorse it, I would feel fairly comfortable with either.
Thanks, Kim. Amy, and then Jeff Davis.
Thank you, Commissioner Baker. So I heard, well, first of all, I also believe the conservation principles that we've developed at the department are pretty robust and can help walk through the thinking behind each of them and the like what each word meant to us when we chose it. You know, we can kind of get into that fine level if that's useful. But what I heard you talking about at the beginning, Commissioner Baker, when you gave the example of California and Missouri, and you talked sort of about your vision around a conservation policy, it got me thinking about what is it you want the policy to deliver to you as a commission? And so I wrote down some different things that it could deliver to you. And I heard elements of it in your opening remarks. So the first one is that, do you want the policy to deliver outcomes? Like, do you want it to speak to what you want to deliver to the state? Or is it about an approach that you want to deploy when you make decisions? Is it perhaps a set of criteria that you walk through to understand if your decisions as a commission are adhering to the mission or the outcome you're trying to shoot for? Is it about governance? You talked a little bit about the way Missouri is organized versus the way California versus perhaps the way we are. Is it really about the governance of how the commission wants to interact with conservation relative to the department? And then is it a decision matrix? You know, is it actually a place where you want to think about the decisions that you make and know that you're working in the quadrant of conservation? Like, is there something about how you essentially certify your own decisions to know that you're in keeping with conservation? So those were just some ideas that I wrote down that I thought I heard reflected from you and the other commissioners.
Okay, so back to me. The first thing is, Amy, you're very good at encapsulating discussions and coming back with sort of fairly easy to conceive of questions. These are the kind of questions that we need to answer as a body, not just me for sure. But this, I don't see this as an outcomes document. And I don't necessarily see it as a document to guide commission policies, although that would be part of it. I see it as a document to guide agency policy, as you guys who do the vast amount, you make all the decisions, you know, thousands that we don't even ever see. So what I see is that what I'm trying to do is ask the fellow commissioners if we need to revisit the concept of conservation and update it and modernize it with a very strong future-facing look that provides the kind of policy direction that, at least in my mind, I think that it's what we're supposed to be doing. I remember, I think I've laughed about this with you before. I mean, I remember we spent a half hour one commission meeting deciding who got to drive the tractor on a field in Skagit Valley. And I thought to myself, really, this is not what I'm here for. But what I think I and everyone else on the commission is committed to is a robust, biodiverse future. And we talk about this all the time, and we usually talk about it in response to specific problems, be they large problems like salmon or tiny little problems. And so this is just asking and exploring the, and I don't, I'm quite sure we don't have a shared definition of what the word means. And I'm also quite sure that we don't really understand or we certainly don't have a shared decision-making point of view about what principles we are working under. Maybe that's organic and maybe that's the way it's going to be. But this question is to see if we can come up with something that will guide both us and the agency into the future to try to do what we can to have a green future ahead of us. So that was my objective personally. I see hands up. I see Amy's hand up.
Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner. But, you know, the one thing that I did want to throw out there, which is an emerging conversation at the state level, and I think it's certainly at the national level as well, and it is not captured in our conservation principles, is the idea of environmental justice, or the idea of making sure that the benefits are, the benefits of conservation are equally shared. And that is something that we are at the very beginnings of a conversation, just an internal conversation at the department. But I would put it on the table that if we are gonna look at conservation principles, we don't wanna leave out the environmental justice component of it. And that's really new space for us as a department, and it's new space for us as a culture. So it's nascent, you know?
Let's see, Jeff Davis and then Commissioner Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I can wrap a little bow around this. I completely agree with Commissioner Thorburn on the ecosystem suite of species management. It's something in the wildlife profession that we've been talking about since before I got into college, which was just a day or two ago, about moving to the more global ecosystem approach. Now, we'll never get away from single species, as Commissioner Thorburn mentioned, for a whole host of reasons, both at the state authority level and the federal authority level. But that doesn't mean that we can't internally start to evolve ourselves more or faster towards how do even the individual species benefit from that ecosystem approach. Commissioner Smith, you mentioned it's the previous version of the current SWAP, State Wildlife Action Plan, and how that was built. And that is an area where I'll admit that I think as an agency, we've struggled. Maybe because you have competing like State Wildlife Action Plan and priority habitats and species, and those could be married up a little better, in my opinion. And we have another opportunity to update the SWAP here in a few years. But I also will remind you that a golden opportunity we have in front of us is the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Roadmap, which is in the strategic plan you adopted. And based on this conversation, the intention is it will deliver on everything that all of you have said to date. So I'm excited about that. When I think about a conservation policy at a commission level, I think of, you know, this, and maybe I'm speaking out of school here, but I think some of the struggle that we have internally is that the mandates don't have always a very clear and robust bridge, right? There's the preserve, protect, perpetuate. We're really good at the management piece. We don't control all the levers around preserve, protect, perpetuate. And we have invested a lot of resources in the provide sustainable opportunity side. I think salmon's a great example where there's room for us to grow in such a conservation policy. Because if we don't do, like Commissioner Thorburn saying, And we're seeing this across the board, but more prominently in the Puget Sound. As the habitat is degraded, so goes the natural origin populations. So we have to take a more proactive approach, in my opinion, around the more holistic conservation. And just because we don't have a direct authority doesn't mean we don't have meaningful influence that can protect and restore. In fact, right now, as we speak, as of yesterday, House Bill 1117 passed out of the Senate Policy Committee. It's on its way to Ways and Means. Really, what that bill will do is set up integration of salmon recovery plan elements into Growth Management Act. It will require public entities to contribute to net ecological gain at the watershed scale. And while folks can look at the title of the bill and think that that's just a focus on salmon, really watershed functions that we're going after for salmon are properly functioning conditions. And I would argue, besides the salmon, our wildlife populations are going to see a significant improvement in habitat conditions and hopefully recovery. I also think, you know, that bridge is, and this is a really tough job for all of you, and it's an even tougher job oftentimes when the director has to make a decision about the different values and perspectives and needs and expectations that 8 million people have that are here right now. And Commissioner Kuntz is right. I think about the population or the residents that aren't here yet, whether they be the 3 million that are projected to come up here over the next decade or future generations that aren't born yet. And how do we pass this off? This is my grandfather's words, pass this off in a better state than what we inherited. And I think that's what we're all trying to do in our own spheres of work. And that means that hunters and anglers are a critical component of this. They've contributed significantly to conservation. Other people that don't hunt or fish have contributed significantly to conservation and continue to increase their investment and priority around conservation. And there's people that sit in their dining room and eat dinner and look out the window and see birds and want to make sure that that those birds are seeing sound stewardship and management as well, even though they don't theoretically recreate or consume them. So I view a conservation policy at the commission level to really deliver when we're putting together decision packages, how does the department do our work, our staff work, to deliver a comprehensive decision package that is mindful of the broader conservation objectives that are part of our mandate, budgetarily as well. So the environmental justice piece, Amy, I love that, all about it. Part of a conservation piece, I'll argue my career has been spent continuing to draw a line in the sand along the urban growth area that continues to expand outward. And we see habitat loss, as that line moves outward. And our agency, we used to have urban biologists. And I think we have like one right now. And that's a lost opportunity. We're losing urban biodiversity faster than the other types of biodiversity. And our species, in my opinion, will vastly benefit from not continuing to just look at the relatively untouched areas as the only space for us to defend and need to seek restoration opportunities in those urbanized areas, because we're seeing heat island effect around the Puget Sound, and that's bad for people. And that will pull legislative resources into reactionary health care and well-being. And so there's a ton of opportunities that I see a conservation policy of the commission could really help the department do what we're saying in our strategic plan, which is let's try to serve as many, if not all, of the 8 million people that are here now I'll remind us that it was 7.2 million people pre-COVID. We are now up to an estimated 8 million people since COVID. So our population, human population growth is going to increase. It is an absolute prime time for you all to take up this conversation around a conservation policy and really help the department help our people and help fish and wildlife and habitat conservation and restoration.
That was well said, Jeff. Thank you. Commissioner Kuntz and then Commissioner Smith. I'd like to say that we're going to try to end this committee kind of on time, which is supposedly about 11:30. That's 4 minutes from now. I think we can go a few minutes over, but I'll hold what else I was going to say until the end. So go ahead, Fred.
I think that in order to sort of, I kind of feel like this is a greased pig in a country fair, you know, like every time you think you start to get it, it slips away from you. And I think to kind of break this out, you know, this kind of bigger goal maybe of coming up with a commission policy on conservation, I would advocate that we really just first start with coming to grips with what do we mean by conservation. And the reason that I say that is my mother was a history teacher, okay? And so let me take a couple minutes and just trace for you the history of the word conservation and why that has always had a great influence on state wildlife agencies. Before 1907, the word conservation was actually used in the canning industry, okay? It was about preserving fish and fruit in cans. And in 1907, Gifford Pinchot, many of you know, the first U.S. Forest Service head, later would become governor of Pennsylvania, he came up with the idea that conservation is really the actions that sustain the use of animals. Because, you know, in that time period, the environmental context was disappearing natural resources, both forests and game. And he came up with that in 1907, and Teddy Roosevelt was president, really loved that idea. And quickly, Teddy died two years later, but he really started propagating this idea of conservation. And in this time period, you know, sort of 1910 to 1930, that's when all the state wildlife agencies were starting to be developed, you know, as either game and or fish. And they jumped right on this idea of sustainable use, because that was both the environmental context, and that was also reflected the values of the people at the time, right? And this would be a lesson that we would see throughout history, that the society's environmental context and its values would shape the definition of conservation. So here we had sustained use. That's what conservation was. That's all it was just, you know, no more, no less. And that then put the state wildlife agencies, because they didn't have any money, once you had use as the definition of conservation, you had users, right? Users. Who pays? Users. And then this took us down this road of customers and users being hunters and anglers that, you know, we still haven't really broken away from. And, you know, today in Washington, it's only about 37% of our budget comes from hunters and anglers, but nationally it's more like 60%. Now, at the time when Pinchot was going and Teddy Roosevelt and state wildlife agencies were blooming, it's important to understand this wasn't the only viewpoint out there. And actually Pinchot and John Muir would get into arguments about, you know, what really was the purpose of conservation. And John Muir would say that it had nothing to do with use. It was about preserving wilderness, because wilderness is where people get their spiritual rejuvenation. And so that was an early difference. It's important to understand, though, that both of those viewpoints were human-centric, right? They were both about human benefits. So this started to go along, but state wildlife agencies definitely took the Pinchot route, and that put us onto the track that we're still in many ways on today. But a couple of things have happened since 1907 and 1930 when the agencies got going. One was in 1937 when Aldo Leopold really put a shock into the system, a huge one, because what he said was that wildlife management, and that's what we do, right, is a good management action. I'm going to read it. A good management action was a thing is right when it tends to preserve the integrity, the stability, and the beauty of the biotic community. It's wrong when it tends to do otherwise. Now, why this was a shock was it put ethics and morality right into our business. And that's created angst ever since, right? So we kind of just kept dealing with this angst, and we got through World War II. And it wasn't until really around the first Earth Day that, you know, other people started thinking about other approaches to the word conservation. You with me? And so in 1980, I remember, one nice thing about history is when you get old, you actually lived it, right? So in 1980, we had this big global meeting on the World Conservation Strategy. And there, that's the first time I really observed it starting to shift. And there we said that, you know, not only is conservation about sustainable use, but it's about protecting, in those days, we just said genetics, which really would evolve into biological diversity, Kim. And we also said that it was about sustaining ecological processes. So that was 1980. Along came 1984, and the discipline, the science discipline of conservation biology came along, and Michael Soule. And Soule, surprisingly, I went back last week and I tried to figure out what exactly did he define as conservation. And he never really did. He defined what conservation biology was, and basically it was the science of conservation. But it's obvious what Soule was more closely related to John Muir. You with me? And so what happened is we started like trying to find this balance between John Muir and Pinchot. But in the state wildlife agencies, they were slow to the game. So what happened is by 1988 or 89, I remember being in a meeting at WCS, and I have to go back and look, but I think it was John Robinson first used the slogan that, or the phrase that what we were really doing in conservation was protecting the intrinsic and the extrinsic values of nature. And what he meant by that was the extrinsic values, that's the sustainable use. And John was trying to blend the two. And the intrinsic values of nature are nature for itself, okay? So ever since, there's been this like attempt to try to like decide, well, what's more important, the intrinsic values or the extrinsic values? And remember again, the lesson we learned in conservation definition was that it's always within the context of the environmental problems at the time and the values. And so the values have been changing. And the trouble is that with I see from state wildlife agencies is we need to define conservation in a way that's more clear that we've not abandoned sustainable use, but that we've broadened the definition of conservation. And I think we ought to broaden it in a way, and I think we can do it if we work on it, that would show not only is it science-based, but that it preserves both the intrinsic and the extrinsic values. And also it looks towards both the current generation and the future generations. And if we were to put together a definition like that, I think it would set us into a well-rounded foundation to guide the department and guide future planning and give a justification also to the big tent, to the reason why we need people to join us. The benefits are no longer just about sustainable use. The benefits are about health and resiliency. The benefits are about security. And so I think it's like essential that if we want to really move this agency and be a model, we need to redefine first conservation, then we need to look at those governance principles, and then we need to guide the budget so that it starts to really reflect, you know, really what the values are trending towards in Washington. So that's my history speech and my mother's memory.
That was very impressive, Fred. Thank you. Like I said, we have a bunch of people from diverse backgrounds on this commission and in our staff, and you are very smart people. So that was very good. Let's see. We do have a couple more commenters here. I have Jeff Davis and Lorna Smith. Go ahead, Jeff.
I think I was next, was I not, Jeff? Yeah. So Fred said a lot of what I would have said, only I probably would have said it more succinctly because he's got all the great history. But I just want to, you know, state again, I don't think we have to reinvent the wheel with this. For instance, you know, under what we were sent out, the policy 5004, if, you know, if this read conservation is the management, protection, and restoration of ecosystems for the long-term benefit of people and for fish, wildlife, and their habitat, that's a good start right there. I mean, I think we could take that and build from it for a succinct definition of what conservation is and then build a policy from it. So, you know, I would just urge us not to, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think there's a lot of good work that has been done that we can rely on. I'm very sensitive as a former bureaucrat to not ignore all the good work that's gone before. So let's incorporate it in and, you know, move forward. That's my succinct 2 cents worth.
Thank you, Lorna. Jeff Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Kuntz, well said. I think add. You know, when I think about what Commissioner Thorburn said, and she talked about ecosystems and how do we do a better job thinking more holistically about the conservation and restoration of those ecosystems, right? And I think, you know, maybe naively, I think of like, if the use piece is problematic for me in that, if we don't have pollinators, healthy native pollinators, then what sort of elk forage do we have across the landscape? And this is, I say this to you because the hunters and anglers role, in my opinion, is really an important piece of the puzzle. I'll argue if for some reason we were ever to move away from providing deer hunting opportunities and our urban growth areas continue to expand out, the social tolerance of deer in the urban area becomes less and less because we've seen this play out over and over and over across our landscape. Squim is a great example of elk where they used to be beloved until they stayed in one place after one harsh winter. And while there's a big elk sign up on behalf of Squim, there's not very many people in Squim that love the elk anymore, right? So we have to be mindful in my mind of not, how do we do this in a way that brings people together and doesn't just add to further widened divides that are out there right now? And what are the roles that and expectations that all 8 million people have or the vast majority of them have? And how would this policy and our thinking about Aldo versus Teddy and how do we merge those together in this policy so that when people look at it just like a mission statement, the vast majority of the residents can see their values, their needs and expectations being respected in there, and in some cases the role that they might be playing on their own to deliver or contribute to the conservation of fish and wildlife and habitat for future generations. So I appreciate the history. I feel like my college classes just got condensed down into Commissioner Kuntz's statement. But that's what gives me hope, is not casting out or operating in a way where hunters and anglers feel like they're under attack, but also helping them come together maybe with those people like the mutualist. I'll say this, if you've read our studies, we have the pluralist and the pluralists are sitting right in between the traditionalist and the mutualist. There's a golden opportunity in my mind to work with the pluralist to help us strengthen that bridge between the different values that we serve. So I'll shut up because we're over time, and Madam Chair, you wanted to leave on time.
Thank you, Jeff. Well, Ed, I thought I saw Fred's hand back up, but it went down. Is that correct, Fred?
Well, if we're running out of time, I want you to be able to speak.
Well, as a summary, what I propose is that first off, these are just fantastic conversations, and so I appreciate everybody's willingness to speak. With the help of anybody who wants to participate, I will propose a staged agenda. I'm not sure how much we will get to at any one meeting, but we will start with a definition of the word and a discussion about what that means, and going on to the principles by which we work. But at some point along the way, we'll include everything everybody wants to talk about. That's the only way to get to a process which includes all viewpoints. That's our strong suit, and with heavy emphasis on I like the idea of doing an inventory of the past work that's been done and where it now stands. So I'll put together an agenda and get it out well in advance of the next meeting, talking to at the very least Jeff and Nate, and then and give you guys a chance to edit it. And so that seems to me the best we can do for right now. But again, appreciating the brain stretching that's gone on in the last hour and a half. Are there any other closing comments? And Fred, you're welcome to close if you want.
Well, I just want to say that Jeff, I didn't in any way mean to imply that we were going to abandon, you know, traditional uses. And I didn't mean to imply, it's just, you know, words matter. And I think we're better off, instead of saying use, like, start talking more about the benefits. Because the benefits, you know, are not just what you extract, like, in a direct way. But in a way, they're all uses, right? Because biological diversity provides us health, and it provides us security, and it provides us all those things. But, you know, back to our history, I think the way we've defined it, and once we went down that path, you know, like, we still use the customer term all the time. I don't think we should. I think we should be talking about the residents of Washington. And I know how difficult these conversations are for people that have had the traditional focus on them to feel slighted. But, you know, like Kim said, you know, we're running out of time, and we have to have these difficult conversations, and we have to realize that, you know, the department to be a big tent has got to reflect a direction. And I think that really starts with, you know, what we mean by conservation, because if we don't, you know, we just kind of keep kicking the tin can down the road, and, you know, we're really, it's really too late for later. And so, as difficult as it is, I think, you know, this is really something that we should spend time on. And, you know, I'm all for it. And again, I think the Big Tent's the right place for it.
So thanks. Wait, here comes Don. Don, you get the last word.
Well, I'm just going to be very quick, wrapping all the way back to the discussion on the mission statement. I'm fully in favor of a consistent mission statement. If the commission has adopted one, then we have one. I was concerned about a great big workload of opening up the commission statement and spending a whole bunch of time trying to develop a new one. So I'm good with that discussion that happened earlier. I just wanted to make sure that where we were coming from, because I didn't know.
Absolutely, no problem. Okay, so it's 11:45 on, I believe, March 25th. We will adjourn this meeting of the Big Tent Committee. I will try to synopsize what we've done today. Tomorrow, we'll probably do it poorly and would ask that other committee members assist. I would also like to ask that we review the materials that Nate and Jeff provided us today, kind of as homework. It sounds like most of us already have, but reread the agency conservation policy and the principles in preparation for our next meeting. And I really appreciate having quality people such as yourselves to work with. This is really good. So thank you very much. This meeting's adjourned.